Buddhis, the last few days I've been talking to you about nishkamata and ahaituki, two conditions that should be adopted on the path of bhakti. So we've learned in quite some detail why our scriptures and saints tell us it is better not to ask God for bhakti. It is better not to ask God for any worldly thing, whether it be sattvic, rajas, or tamas, even if there's nothing wrong with asking Him for those things, because at least you're thinking of God in some way, yet your mind is not truly being devoted to God if you are doing that, because whatever you are desiring, that is where your mind is. So you should keep your mind purely in God and not add worldly desires to your devotion to God. Just attach your mind to God, desire Him, and leave aside the worldly desires when you're praying to God. Along these lines, Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji has an interesting statement. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam va jagadish kamaye, mama janmani janmani shvare, bhavatad bhaktirahai tuki tvai. He says, O Krishna, I want to have such ahaituki bhakti for you, such selfless devotion to you, that I should never ask you for anything. I should not ask you for dhan, for wealth. I should not ask you for jan, that people should follow me and consider me great and give me compliments, or even that I should have a loving family or a beautiful wife. I'm not asking you for any of those things. I'm not asking you to make me a great poet. What am I asking you for? Give me ahaituki bhakti. Give me selfless, pure devotion to you. Janmani janmani, in life after life. It means he's also not asking for liberation, what we call mukti or moksha. This is something else to consider. Normally, if someone accepted this point, that, okay, I'm not going to ask God for bhukti. When I'm doing devotion to God, I'm not going to ask Him for any worldly thing. But I'll ask Him for mukti instead of bhukti. What is mukti? Sounds like a good thing on the surface. Mukti means to be released. Like if you're in the hospital and you're released from the hospital, you got mukti from the hospital. Or you're in the jail, you served your jail sentence, so they let you go free. You got mukti. So being freed from bondage, getting let out of the chains of that jail, that's mukti. What is mukti in the spiritual sense? It means we're released or liberated from the bondage of maya. Maya, that which keeps us separated from God, is removed from between us and God. Right now we're all bound by maya. And because we're bound by maya, we're bound by triguna, sattva, raj, tam. We're bound by tritap, the three types of suffering. Like physical and mental suffering, the suffering which is inflicted upon us by others, and the suffering which comes to us from forces of nature. We would be released from these three types of suffering, released from the bondage of sattva, raj, tam, released from the bondage of trikarma, sanchit karma, all of our uncountable past actions which are hanging over our head because we haven't received the results of those. Our kriyaman karma, the fact that whatever we're doing in this life, we're going to have to get the result of that in the future. And our prarabdha karma, that part of our sanchit karma which is given to us to undergo as our destiny in this life. These three kinds of karma are also an eternal bondage on the soul. The soul is eternally bound by maya, by karma, by kal, by triguna, tritap, panchaklesh, three kinds of sharir, three kinds of bodies that we have, our physical body, our sukshma sharir, our subtle body, and our karan sharir, which contains all of our past sanskars and vasanas from uncountable past lifetimes, which even during mahapralaya we're not free from. So we have all these kinds of bondage, and because of these kinds of bondage, we take birth after birth, and we cycle through the 8.4 million species of existence, and we suffer in many different ways in this world. So mukti means being freed from all of that forever. On the surface, it sounds like a good thing. Yet, look at a statement by Rup Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu. Bhukti mukti sprihayavat pishachi hridivartate. He calls the desire for bhukti as well as the desire for mukti as pishachini. Pishach means like a demoness, a witch. We can understand that, as we discussed, the desire for bhukti when it comes in the heart, or even if a person receives bhukti, if they receive great amounts of wealth and power in this world, then it can become a distraction for them on the path to God. But why is mukti being called a pishachini, a demoness? We can understand. What actually happens when a person gets mukti? See, right now we have three parts to our personality. Our soul, our mind, and our body. Soul is our true self, and it is divine. It is ansh of Satchidananda Brahma, Shri Krishna. Our soul is eternally a part of Shri Krishna. But our mind and body are mayic. So if we receive liberation from maya, it means we are also liberated from our body and from our mind. From our body, of course, if you leave this world never to return, nasa punaravartate, nasa punaravartate, according to our Vedas, after you get moksha, you never come back here on this world ever again, so what's the need for a body? You don't have a material body anymore. But you also get antahkarana nivritti. You are forever freed from your antahkarana, from your mind. Mind, which is the repository of all of your uncountable past actions, all of your desires, all of your attachments. Not only has that mind been purified, but in fact, it's been eliminated, because it's mayic. If you're liberated from maya, it means you're liberated from all things mayic. So you can't be liberated and keep your mayic mind. So what happens? The soul leaves its body, leaves its mind, and goes and merges into God. There are two aspects of God. द्वेवाव ब्रह्मणो रूपे मूर्तं चैवा मूर्तं च. वेद says God has a form and he is also formless. He is saguna sakar brahm and he is nirguna nirakar brahm. He is God with a form, with virtues, like we were just singing about all of Shri Krishna's gunas, all of his virtues. So you could attain the personal form of God, sakar brahm, and experience him, but this is not the state of moksha or mukti. In the state of mukti, you merge into nirakar brahm. Now, nirakar brahm is the same God as Krishna, Ram. Shri Krishna says, brahmano hi pratishthaham, Gita. Formless God is established in me. It's not something else. It's not another God or another power. Shri Krishna says, nirakar brahm is a part of me. But he exists eternally in both ways, as a formless divine existence, like a dormant divine power, which is omnipresent, but not active, not actively gracious or doing any leelas, just existing as a formless truth. And simultaneously he exists in his personal form, with a form, with virtues, doing leelas, with a divine abode. So his divine abode, his form, his names, his virtues, all of these which are manifested in his personal form, these are also omnipresent. But the one who just gets mukti just merges into formless God. So just like formless God's personality is not actively manifested, you can't say Shri Krishna as nirakar brahm is beautiful. You can't say he's beautiful. Why not? He has no form. Beauty is a virtue of God, which is unmanifest in that nirakar aspect. Can you say that he's kind? Sure, you can, in the same way that a sleeping person is kind. If a very kind person went to sleep, never ever to wake up again, then is his kindness of any use to you? No. Formless God is like that. Kindness is a power, a virtue of God, which lies dormant in his formless aspect. So when Nirakar Brahm himself is not active, not self-aware, does not do anything, does not even experience anything, because all of his activity and all of his virtues lie dormant like a sleeping person, then you can understand that the soul that merges into formless God becomes just like that. He never again experiences anything. So on one hand it sounds good. Oh, I'll get mukti. I'll be released from suffering, from all the cycle of birth and death, from everything. Well, if it's release from suffering you want, I can get a big, strong person and give him a club and have him knock you over the head with it. You go unconscious, you'll cease to experience anything for the time that you're unconscious. You can go to the doctor when you're about to get an operation, he puts the mask on your face, the gas comes and puts you to sleep. He's doing things to your body, cutting you open. You don't feel anything. You're in the state of temporary mukti. Samadhi sushupti mokcheshu brahma rupata. Sankhya Darshan says that being in samadhi, being totally unconscious, or being in the state of moksha, are all very comparable things, because when you're in those states, you don't experience anything at all. So mukti is a divine state. However, if you attain this divine state of no experience, it's forever. Would you like to go to sleep and never wake up again? That's mukti. You'll be relieved from ever having to suffer again, but would you agree to it? If you were told, drink this, you can go to sleep and never wake up again. No one would want to drink it. We all want to experience. This is why when Sridharacharya was writing his Tika on the Bhagavatam, Sridharacharya is a follower of Shankaracharya's philosophy. But when he explained the Bhagavatam, he said that this second shloka of the Bhagavat that starts with the words dharma prodhita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam vedyam vastavamatra vastu shivadam tapatrayonmulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimva Vairishvaraha Sadhyo Hridya Varudhyate Trikritibhi Shushru Shubhistachanat. He says in the beginning where it says Dharma Projhita Kaitavaha. In this Bhagavatam, such a dharma is being taught which is kaitava rahit. It is without any kind of deception or tricks. Things that deceive you lead you in the wrong direction. Then he went on, this is Vedavyasji's words. Sridharacharya explained that, okay, what is that dharma which contains some kaitava? Some deception. He says there are four kinds of deception. Dharma, arth, kam, moksh. The four purusharth. See, I bet you're learning lots of new things in this series of speeches. Or you might be thinking Swamiji's lost his marbles. Now he's telling us dharma, arth, kam, moksh are deceptions. Aren't these the four aims of human life? You see, there are different levels of teaching in our scriptures. Just like in our Vedas, we find that there are great sections devoted to telling people to do yajna, Vedic rituals, all kinds of religious formalities. For what? For attaining swarga. And yet in the same Vedas, we find statements telling us that those who go to swarga, they don't attain true happiness. And they only stay there for a temporary time. And then they come back here. So in fact, trying to go to swarga is foolish. Why do we find both kinds of statements? For different levels of individuals. Let's say there's someone who only wants worldly enjoyments and he's not even able to have faith in God or consider the possibility of attaining God. So to talk to that person about divine happiness makes no sense. But they should be able to find some kind of teaching in Sanatana Dharma that applies to them. So our scriptures of Sanatana Dharma say for that kind of a person who doesn't wish to attain God, they only wish to enjoy worldly pleasures, they are told, you know, if it's worldly pleasures you like, there are even greater pleasures than this world in swarga. It's like the pleasures of this world, but multiplied by many times. So that person says, oh, really? That selfish, worldly person says, that sounds good. How do I get that? So then he's told, oh, you have to do all of this charity. You have to discipline your mind and perform all of these Vedic rituals and all of these worshipping formalities. Then you can go to Swarg and enjoy over there for thousands of years. In other words, Veda is giving that person an incentive to do good actions. And as a byproduct, in order to perform these actions which will give him entrance to Swarg, that person is forced to discipline his mind and make certain sacrifices. So he's actually inching in the right direction. Veda has enticed him to go in a positive direction, even though he was just a worldly, selfish person. Then for someone who's a little more evolved spiritually, who can think about, oh, maybe there's something beyond these worldly enjoyments, because there's always a lot of suffering that goes along with enjoying the world. So then Ved tells in general that there's something called moksha. It's a state of perfect peace. So you could desire to go beyond this material existence and in fact be freed from this material existence, the state of moksha. Most people, that's as far as they could think. But there's something beyond that. The experience of saguna sakar brahm is beyond the state of kaivalya moksha, or absolute liberation. You see, moksha is used in a general way in our scriptures. Although within, I can say, okay, you attain something divine. Either you're in the material world or you've entered the divine realm. A general statement. But within that divine realm, there are different types of divine bliss. You can attain formless God, you can attain the personal form of God, but even within that category, you could have attained the personal form of God in His almighty form. You could attain the personal form of God in His loving form. Then depending what relationship you have with Him, you could have a higher and higher experience of bliss. All of this would be included with one single statement. You've attained something divine. So the word moksha is also used like that. Sometimes it means just this state of absolute liberation where you merge into God and finish your personality. But sometimes it just indicates that general divine state. Like if I were to say to you, oh, you're very poor, why don't you try to become rich? It's a general statement. What does becoming rich mean? If you get $1 million, you're rich, right? But you could also get $1 billion. You're still considered rich, but you're many times more rich than, you're 1,000 times more rich than the one with $1 million. You could also get $1 trillion. Then you're again 1,000 times more rich than the one with even $1 billion. So the word rich just means you're not poor anymore. Something like this in our scriptures, because most people are, you can't lay too much information on someone all at once that, oh, in the divine world you have this option and that option and that option. It's just like right now you're poor, meaning you're suffering under Maya, you're under the bondage of Maya, you're dissatisfied. Well, you could attain something divine. You could become rich. So in that way, our scriptures just generally indicate towards the possibility of attaining God in many places. But when you look at it more specifically, then this word moksha is just for that attainment when you merge into formless God, leaving your body and mind behind, and then never experiencing anything ever again. This is the pure state of moksha. So this is said in our Vedas, brahmavid brahmaiva bhavati. When you know God, you become God. When you know Brahm, you become Brahm. That's the literal meaning of this mantra. What does that mean? You purified your mind, you surrendered to God 100% with this desire that, God, I never want to be born in this world again. I have a desire for mukti. Please liberate me from this cycle of birth and death. Liberate me from all my material sufferings. And I just want to merge into nirakar brahm. And that's it, forever. So when that happens, does the soul actually cease to exist? No. It apparently ceases to exist, not actually. Let's say there's a drop of water, and that drop of water enters the ocean. It appears to you that the drop of water has disappeared, right? But has it ceased to exist? No. You just can't visually separate it anymore from the ocean. It joined all the other water in the ocean. Or you can say, like, let's say there's a mountain of grains of rice. From a distance, it just looks like white. Something, some mound of something white. If you look close, you see, oh, it's made up of all these grains of rice. Now, let's say you take one more grain of rice and you toss it onto the mountain. It looks like that grain of rice disappeared into the white mountain. But if you look more closely, you can still distinguish it, right? Just like that drop of water that entered the ocean, that molecule of H2O, it didn't get destroyed. You just can't actually see it anymore. So you can say, when we merge into God, we lose our apparent identity. But our soul is not destroyed. We do not cease to exist. But because we don't have a body or a mind, just our soul merges into God. So our personality is not retained, but our existence is retained. Our personal identity is our mind and our body. Without that, you can say we retain an impersonal identity, the soul, which merges into God and no longer, then that soul no longer experiences or is aware of anything. This is mukti. So if you attain this state of mukti, you will remain bereft of any experience forever. You will never ever experience this world, nor will you ever get to experience God. Whereas the one who has desired for something more, the one who desired to meet God or experience God and thus worshipped God in his saguna sakar roop, that person receives a divine body in the divine world and retains their divine mind. However, that mind becomes divinized. So your personal identity is retained but becomes completely and wholly divine. The soul now has a divine mind and a divine body made of the same substance that God is made of. Sat Chit Anand. Another way to look at it, God has a personal power. Swarup Shakti, it's called. That Swarup Shakti is, it is through this power that God is all powerful, all knowing, and all blissful. When a soul surrenders to God with a desire to experience God, then God gives him this Swarup Shakti. So the soul becomes Swarup Shakti Yukt. He receives that Swarup Shakti and forever gets to enjoy the divine bliss through his five divine senses and through his divine mind. But the one who only gets liberation doesn't receive Swarup Shakti, just his soul merges into God. You might say, isn't there some experience of what is called Brahmanand, the bliss of formless God? Yes, there is, but before leaving the earth. When someone surrenders to God with the desire to get liberation and is going to merge into formless God, before he leaves his body, before he leaves this earth, during that time he can experience in his mind the bliss of formless God and his oneness with God. This is called Brahmanand. However, even that state of Brahmanand, which this liberated soul is experiencing before he leaves the earth, even that does not compare to the state of Premanand, which is when you actually get to experience God in his personal form. Rup Goswami again enlightens us. Brahmanando bhavedesha chet parardha guni krita naiti bhakti sukham bodhe paramanu tulamapi. He says this Brahmanand compared to Premanand is like this. Take Brahmanand, multiply it by one parardh. What is a parardh? It is 155 trillion, 520 billion. So multiply Brahmanand by that much, and it still won't equal one paramanu, paramanu tulamapi. It won't even equal one subparticle, the tiniest amount of Premanand that you can get will still exceed that much Brahmanand. And previously in this series of speeches, I gave you examples. Like the Pravritti Parayana Paramahansas, like King Janak, who were totally absorbed in this bliss of Brahmanand, yet when he got a chance to meet Bhagwan Ram face to face, what happened to him? Brahma Sukhahi Manatyaga Barabhasa. He says, my mind was forcefully drawn to the divine beauty and bliss of God in his personal form, and I have forever forsaken that bliss of Brahmanand, formless God. In addition, the Nivritti Parayana Paramahansas, like Sanakadik and Shukadevji, Muktanam Api Siddhanam Narayana Parayana Sudurlabha Prashantatma Kotishvapi Mahamune. Bhagavatam says, out of millions of such Jivan Mukt Paramahansas who are completely absorbed in the bliss of Brahmanand, out of millions of them, every once in a while, one of them gets the chance to experience the Premanand of Shri Krishna. Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgrantha Apyurukrame Kurvantya Haitukim Bhakti Mittham Bhuta Guno Hari. Bhagavatam. That bliss of the personal form of God is so great that even those examples like Shukadevji, who were completely absorbed in the bliss of formless God and totally self-complacent, yet when they got to experience even one of Krishna's virtues, like his beauty or his kindness, which is not manifested in formless God, just on the basis of that one guna, he abandoned his absorption in samadhi forever and came and listened to the entire Bhagavatam because he wanted to hear more about Shri Krishna's gunas and form and leelas. So we have all of these examples that never mind after leaving their body when they go and merge into God and never experience anything ever again, leaving that aside, even when they're still here, when they still have the ability to experience Brahmanand, if they're given the chance to experience Premanand, they abandon their experience of Brahmanand forever for the chance to drown themselves in the bliss of the personal form of God. So if you ask God for mukti, you're going to remain bereft of the experience of Premanand forever. This is the problem with mukti. Yes, you're free from ever suffering in this world again. But in a way, if you look at it, it would have been better to ask God for bhukti. If you stay in the field of bhukti, you'll keep being reborn again and again here in this world, and eventually you may receive the knowledge one day that could enlighten you, and you will realize, oh, God is the goal. God could give me perfect happiness. Then you may start doing selfless devotion to God, and eventually you could receive His divine love, His Premanand. But if you have the desire for mukti, and you surrender to God with that desire in your heart, He will give you mukti, and that will be the end of your chance to ever experience Premanand. So this is why, even out of those four Kaitava, Sridharacharya said, dharma, arth, and kaam, those three keep you in maya. Even if you follow all the good actions, the dharma, that takes you to swarg and then brings you back. So that's also a deception, because that's not the topmost attainment. But even moksha is a deception. Taro madhye moksha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji says, out of the four kinds of deceptions, I consider moksha to be pradhan. The leader among all deceivers is moksha. Because that one, if it gets a hold of you, it never lets go. Worldly desires grab you and let go, grab you and let go. But the moksha, if that one gets a hold of you, you're never coming out of that state of moksha. So you'll never get to experience the lilas and gunas of the personal form of God. This is why when Bhagwan Ram appeared before Kagbhushundi and said, Kagbhushundi manguvar ati prasanna mohi jana, Anima siddhi apar nidhi moksha sakala sukha khan. O Kagbhushundi, I'm so pleased with you today, I'm willing to give you anything. But he didn't stop there, he made some suggestions. He said, I'm willing to give you anything, so go ahead and ask. Why don't you ask for anima dikka siddhi? The great sattvic siddhis of yoga. Kagbhushundi is thinking. But even sage Patanjali has said, samadha vupasarga vyutthane siddhaya, that these yogic siddhis which arise when someone follows the path of ashtang yoga, they are but obstacles on the path to God, because they are also material powers which allure the mind and divert one from the path of God realization. So they should not be indulged in. So he wasn't interested in that. Aparanidhi, Bhagwan Ram said. Kagbhushundi is thinking, aparanidhi, wealth, worldly wealth. Even if you give me all of Kuber's wealth, I still won't be satisfied. That's the nature of worldly desires. So he finished by saying moksha. Or you could ask for liberation. So Kagbhushundi is thinking, have you not found anyone since morning to make a fool of? You're trying to fool me here today? But I'm not that easily fooled. I'm a crow after all. Crows are very clever. So he says, I'm not asking you for any of those things that you're holding out in front of me like a smorgasbord, like a buffet. You know, here, take your pick. I want that thing you're hiding in the back room. The best thing. Oh, what's that? Avirala bhakti vishuddha tava shruti purana jehi gava jehi khojat yogish muni prabhu prasad ko pav par dehu daya kari ram. I want bhakti. See here, bhakti is being used as a synonym for that premanand. There's two kinds of bhakti. There's the bhakti you have to do. It's called sadhana bhakti, where you make the effort to attach your mind to God. And then once you surrender to God, if you had a desire to experience God's personal form, the divine bliss of his personal form, then he gives you a divine power called bhakti. So there's two kinds of bhakti. One you do, you practice, and the other is a divine power which he gives you once you've purified your heart through the sadhana bhakti. So sadhana bhakti purifies your heart, then you receive siddha bhakti, the divine bhakti. Here, Kaghushundi refers to it as avirala bhakti. And Vishuddha Bhakti, that's God's divine power, having received which, you get to have a personal relationship with God in the divine world. So he's saying, I want that thing. I want your Avirala Bhakti. Don't give me moksha. In fact, in the Bhagavatam, Shri Krishna says, Sarshti Samipya Sarupya Salok ekatvamapyuta diyamanam na grihananti vinamat sevanam jana. Even if I were to offer mukti to one of my devotees, the one, the true devotee, will not even take it. I'm trying to give it to him, and he doesn't want it. Nanaka prishtham nacha sarvabhaumam na parameshthyam na mahendra dhishnyam na yoga siddhira punarbhavam va vanchanti yat padaraja prapanna. Bhagavatam. It is said that the one, the true devotee, who wants to experience Shri Krishna's divine love, his divine bhakti, he has no interest in swarg. He has no interest even in ruling this whole earth planet. Even if he were offered the seat of Indra or the seat of Brahma, he would turn it down. If he were offered the great yogic siddhis, they would have no appeal to him. And even if he were offered apavarg, which is another name of mukti, or liberation, even that holds no interest for him. He only wishes to receive Shri Krishna's divine bhakti. Sometimes we call it divine bhakti, sometimes we call it premanand. There are many different names for it. But it's the topmost thing in the divine world, which is our true goal. Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji says, Pancham Purushartha Sei Prem Mahadhan. Normally people talk about four Purushart. Dharma Arth Kama Moksha, the four aims of human life. He says, no. Purushartha Shiromani Sei Prem Mahadhan. There's a fifth Purushartha. The topmost aim, which is above the other four, is Prem. That divine love or divine bhakti of Shri Krishna. So if you want to attain the topmost thing, you have to ask for that. Not for mukti and not for bhukti. So now you see, after several days talking about selflessness, that our ultimate goal is to receive that topmost state in the divine world where you're given that divine power of bhakti, siddha bhakti. You're given God's premanand. And in order to receive that, there's a condition. You should not ask him for bhukti, nor should you ask him for mukti. So the one who worships God without asking for God to fulfill his worldly ambitions or even to give him liberation, that person receives premanand. Thus, the first condition on the path of bhakti is not to ask for bhukti or mukti. There are other conditions as well that we have to understand, which we'll study again going forward in the speeches to follow. Plus, I'll answer this question tomorrow. If we get that premanand, what about getting released from the suffering of this world? Some people might say, well, I don't want to enter into a state of no experience, but at the same time, the idea of getting released from all of my worldly suffering still sounds good to me. So will I get that? Do I have to choose between that and getting God's premanand? I'll answer that question for you tomorrow. Boliye Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.